Good afternoon, everybody. This is Brian Kaplowitz, and my guest today is Bert Dubin. Bert has been a guest with us several times before, and we've always had a very nice response to him. He's been in the speaking industry for a very long time and has a lot of great advice to share with us, and I'm very glad that you could be with us today, Bert. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Brian, and I want to compliment you on your choice of theme music. It's my music, and I'm delighted that you're using it.
Well, thank you very much. We've been using that for a little while now. I think you gave us permission some time
of
ago.
Course.
You gave it to us on a CD from the NSA, and
of course,
kind of associated with Speaker Match now. So we always make sure that we give you plenty of credit. And for those of
well,
you that have heard our teleseminars before, this is the Bert Dubin that I always refer to when we talk about that music.
So. Well, thank you, Brian.
Puts everybody in the right mood. It's kind of lively, and I definitely like it. Well, I would like to know, Bert, can you tell everybody a little bit about your background and how you got into the speaking industry?
Of course. It was 26 years and 1 month ago that I became a national speaker, knowing nothing. I mean nothing. I was the most ignorant person in the world. I proceeded to make every mistake possible, and there were at least 10,000 of them, and I would not give up. I will confess to you that in the early 1980s, a long time ago, I went broke twice, but I got up off the mat and just got back in the ring, one might say, and slowly but surely made it work. And by the end of the 1980s, I was well into the six-figure range, about 75 bookings a year all over the country, and feeling very good about myself. I had conquered my demons. But I didn't just conquer those demons, Brian. I found out what they were. And it's those demons and the conquering of those demons that I will be discussing on this call.
So the topic for today, in case you're just joining us, is what they don't teach you at speaking business school. And if there's anybody that knows this business well, it's Bert. And, you know, the thing is, like you said, you've had decades of experience, and I think that there have probably been lots of changes in the speaking industry. Definitely a different picture today than it was 26 years ago or 27 years ago when you were getting started. There's one thing that always comes up in our calls with you that you say hasn't changed, and that is tenacity, resolute tenacity.
You said that right.
Can you share some of your views about why that is and
yes,
why
I will.
It's important?
Because this business, Brian, and everyone that's listening, and thank you for being on the call, this business is not an easy business. It is the most difficult business I've ever been in and the most rewarding. Most people do not succeed. Most people do not succeed. My own rule of thumb, this is just empirical, is that about 30 out of 31 that enter the business dreaming of success, big money, fine restaurants, and all of that, do not make it. And the primary reason people do not make it is a lack of tenacity. It takes tenacity. It takes bulldog blood. Now, you may not know exactly what I mean by bulldog blood, so let me tell you a little vignette which will illustrate it. Suppose there is a malfaiteur, French word for bad guy, approaching your house with an ominous look on his face, and you own a bulldog. The bulldog sees this bad guy approaching and attacks him, bites him in the ankle, bites him hard in the ankle. Well, this bad guy has a nice big knife. He stabs your beloved bulldog and sadly ends the dog's life. The dog is dead now. And he thinks, well, now I can get into the house and do my harm. But that dog's teeth do not let go their grip, even in death. It takes the police finally with the jaws of life or the fire department to pry those teeth away from your leg. That is tenacity. It is never giving up, regardless of what. If you do give up, as most people do, you doom yourself to live in the mire of mediocrity. You might make it to the Kmarts of the speaking business, the low-end programs in the darkest hall of the darkest room or the farthest hall in the hotel. I've done those, believe me, in my early days. But you never make it to the big room. You never make it to the big time. You never make it to not having to look on the right side of the menu. Now, the question comes up, how to develop your personal tenacity? It's a matter of defying your demons. Anything in the way of your self-actualization, of your actualizing your potential as someone who indeed is going to make a difference in the lives of people and the affairs of organizations, anything that gets in the way is a demon. All you can do is be incorrigible to an extreme, letting nothing but nothing get in your way. And only 1 in 30, 3%, have this quality, and anyone can develop it, including you.
So in your opinion, do you think that anybody can be successful in the speaking business with tenacity? Is that really all it takes?
No, it takes a lot more than tenacity. It takes, among other things, being authentic on the platform. It takes revealing your true essence as you stand before audiences, standing before them, say, psychologically unclothed. Here I am, folks, warts and all, with all my human frailties. You see, it is not so much the words you say, important though those words may be. It is not your stories, entertaining though those stories may be. It is not your humor, hilarious though it may be. What it is your essence, your core. And, you know, you cannot hide this from people. It reveals itself. They just know it, whether they're looking at you or hearing you speak on the phone. Your state of being is something you cannot conceal. And you stand before people knowing you're an imperfect being, imperfect though you are. You may have wonderful ideas to share with them. And so the important thing is that you make of yourself, as you stand before the audience, for that matter, as you live your life, as a model of the possible. A model of the possible. Think of the Greek statues that you may remember from your ancient history. They were physically models of the possible. Gene Houston, years and years ago, wrote a book called The Possible Human. I don't even know if the book is still in print. However, if you make it your ideal to be the possible human, the ultimate possible human, you will move ahead faster. Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, a very famous quote by Mahatma Gandhi, be the change you want to see in the world. What is the population of the ideal world? How do the ideal people conduct themselves? Be that person. Make yourself accountable for your presence here. In fact, be the authentic you as you share your wisdom. You can be an ordinary person. I'm an ordinary person. And you can share extraordinary concepts. Simple as that. One of the greatest speakers in the world, Nito Cabin, there's a little four-line poem attributed to Nito. I don't know if he actually wrote this or not, but it's a cute little four-liner. You may want to make a note of it. Be who you is, because if you ain't who you is who you ain't.
I like that. So let me just try and get a little bit more from you about this the tenacity and what else is needed. So, again, we're talking about what they're not telling you in business school, speaker business school. In business
exactly.
school, or in the speaker school, they're telling you that, oh, you need to have a demo CD and you need to get a list of people to go after and, you know, you need to do the standard things to build your business. I guess that the tenacity part of it is just being willing to go out there and do what it takes to get those meeting planners on your side and to figure out everything that there is to know about the business. Talk a little bit more about what you really need to have in order to make this work. I'm assuming that most people that are trying to start a speaking business at least have the skill to speak in front of an audience. So once you have that, what else do you need?
Diligence. Let me talk to you about diligence. Some of our listeners may not have heard of Jan Vermeer, V-E-R-M-E-E-R. He was a painter during the Renaissance, and Jan Vermeer did something that all the painters of his time knew could not be done, and even today, no one has been able to do what he does, and you can find his paintings in the great museums of the world. Jan Vermeer, working diligently, discovered how he could paint light, L-I-G-H-T. Look up some of Jan Vermeer's painting and wherever you can find them, art books or whatever, and you will see that I'm telling you the truth. No one else of his time could do it, and as far as I know, no one to this day could do it. He did it with relentless diligence. I will give you a second example. Colonel Sanders, Harlan Sanders, when he was 65 years old, older I'm sure than many of our listeners, living on Social Security, he had nothing but diligence and a recipe for what he called Kentucky Fried Chicken. And he talked about 11 herbs and spices that you can find in any kitchen cabinet. And he went around in the country in his old beat-up Volkswagen, the early Volkswagens from the early 1950s, if you remember, trying to persuade restaurant owners to offer and to produce, in a pressure cooker actually, what he called his Kentucky Fried Chicken. He persevered for years and finally broke through, and the only reason he broke through, this 65-year-old man living on Social Security, was he was relentlessly diligent. Now, I have a Colonel Sanders story, a true story. I lived in the Valley, San Fernando Valley, and Colonel Sanders lived in Encino, I believe. That's the Valley, too. I was in North Hollywood. He drove a big Chrysler, the Chrysler Imperial. I drove a Plymouth. And twice in my life, I pulled into the Chrysler agency in Van Nuys by chance directly behind Colonel Sanders. Him in his big Imperial, me and my in my used Plymouth. And I watched him as he interacted with the service representative in that white suit with a bolo tie, looking exactly like his pictures, if anyone remembers those pictures. He was so courtly, so gentlemanly, so kindly, so gracious. And I had a chance to see him in real life, not on television, not on stage. However, and that's how he became in his older life. Something else about his older life many people don't know. For the last 20 years of his life, Colonel Sanders, the purveyor and promoter of Kentucky Fried Chicken, was a vegetarian.
Really?
Now, a few people know that. But keep in mind, he wouldn't have gotten there had he not been diligent. I will give you a third story. This is a story written by and acted out by Sylvester Stallone. The film is called Rocky. I don't know how many of you know this. Sylvester Stallone was indeed a film writer many years ago. He came up with this story called Rocky. When it went to peddle it to the studios and was told by all of the major studios they wouldn't have it. Finally, one said, okay, we'll have it and we'll create the star. And Stallone said, no, if you want this picture, I star in it. Well, needless to say, that was the original Rocky picture. There have been seven of them now, I believe, something like that. Diligence, diligence, diligence. None of these three people, not Jan Vermeer, not Colonel Sanders, not Sylvester Stallone, would have made it without diligence. Let me now tell you, Brian, about my version of diligence. Living at the time in California, I would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. That's 4 a.m. California time. I'll spare you what I did between 4 and 5. By 5 a.m., I was on the phone making my East Coast calls relentlessly, Monday through Friday. And that's 8 a.m. East Coast. And most decision makers for meetings are at their desk by 8 a.m. The whole idea is to get them early in the morning while their day is fresh, before they have a million things on their mind. It was this kind of relentless diligence, being rejected 24 out of 25 times. That remains the percentage these days. 24 out of 25 well-placed phone calls to decision makers with the budgetary discretion the ability to hire you, the budget to hire you, and a need for your what you can do, do not succeed. You fail. The 25th one, you will make it. That is not just my percentage, my numbers. Others in the business, including some CPAEs, top speakers, report that percentage too. It's a numbers game. That's the way this business is. Relentless diligence, and you will absolutely make it.
It sounds like you're also saying that diligence is much more important than following the rules. From some of the examples you gave, those people didn't necessarily follow the rules for, let's say, how to start a restaurant. Or...
Absolutely. We go right back to being a bulldog. Relentless commitment that nothing but nothing is going to stop you.
So what is a speaker supposed to do? If they have this idea that they're going to be a great speaker, do they not have to do what everybody else is doing?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Let me tell you what I found works for me. I call this little segment Mine, M-I-N-E, Your Life Experience. Audiences want to know how you got there. What makes you so smart? How did you get there in front of them? Why is it you instead of them? Tell your stories. Tell audiences how you got there. Tell audiences of your early life experiences. Tell them how you became you, how you developed the qualities of character. Get that, the qualities of character that enabled you to become the master of yourself, then the master of your topic, and only then the master of the speaking business. Now, I'll give you an example. When I was 8 or 9 years old, my family was living in Ventnor, New Jersey. And by chance, 2 weeks ago today, I was by that little old house that we lived in. What had happened was that we were having tough economic times. Our family lost its house. A lot of families are losing their houses these days. And we moved from Philadelphia to this little house near the Back Bay in Ventnor, New Jersey, near Atlantic City. So I'm a growing up little boy, you know, curious about everything. Just living perhaps only 100 feet from the bulkhead, separating the island from the Back Bay, which in turn proceeded for half a mile or so before you got to the mainland. And one day I saw a little boat, a very small boat, 8 feet long with a mainsail, with a mast 15 feet high, a mainsail, no jib. And there it was, with no license plate, no numbers, no nothing, no identification. I had no idea where it came from. And I thought, I think I'll take it for a ride. It just was there, moored to a sewer pipe, water pipe, whatever it was, just outside the bulkhead. So I got in that little boat, and it was really small, 8 feet. I was later to find out that type of a boat is known as a sabot, S-A-B-O-T. Sabot is the Dutch word, as you may know, for shoe. And I figured out the importance of turning into the wind and never turning away from the wind. I taught myself to sail. Now, get this. This is really a great story. Around a half a mile away to the north was the Dorset Avenue Bridge, a bridge I was on just 2 weeks ago, a drawbridge with a bridge keeper. And I thought, I think I'll sail my little boat. It wasn't mine at all. I had just borrowed the use of it. I sailed down to the bridge. So I did. And as I got there, I thought, well, why not go under the bridge? But I couldn't. My mast was too high. So I tooted my little bicycle horn, toot, toot, you've seen those. And the great arms went down, the bridge went up, and I stopped the whole world. All the traffic had to stop while this eight-year-old kid went through under the bridge at 1 mile per hour. And, of course, once I got over the other side of the bridge, I tacked, I turned around, tooted my horn again, stopped the world again, and sailed home. This was my great joy. Now, this was not just a little kid's pleasure. I learned something. The winds from one day to the next were different. They blow from the east, the west, north, south. The tides were different. Sometimes the tides were coming in, sometimes the tides were going out. What I discovered, and all good sailors discover this, Brian, is that I could engage the prevailing winds and tides to get me wherever I wanted to get. After all, Columbus, when he sailed the Nina, Pinta, and the Santa Maria to discover the New World, actually the Caribbean somewhere, he sailed over and sailed back based on the same winds, same tides. I was able to figure out as a small boy the ocean of life. the ocean of life, the wind is not always with us, the tides are not always with us, but we can engage prevailing conditions. We can engage prevailing conditions, whatever they may be, and use them to get from where we are to where we want to be. There's a little more on this, a bit more on this story, which is worth going into. I think it's extremely important, especially for an emerging speaker, to know what his or her philosophy is, her values and their purpose. Because your values, your purpose, your philosophy are your North Star. They guide you to get from where you are to where you want to be. And there will be vicissitudes, there will be challenges, there will be obstacles, whatever they are, as Robert Schiller so well said, you go under them, over them, around them, or through them, whatever it may take to get where you want to get.
You know, you're talking a lot, you mentioned the story and how important that is to actually becoming a successful speaker, and it occurs to me that Colonel Sanders had a great story. Some of these people that you're talking about have great stories. But what's also interesting is that you are a very captivating storyteller. You have, I'm sure, very specific word choices that you use. You know how to be entertaining, and people want to listen to the story you have to tell. In addition to being diligent and having tenacity, is that another key factor that you think a speaker needs to have? They need to be able to be a great storyteller?
Let me change it. I would say that, yes, but more important than that, be a student of life. I have been a student of life ever since my father abused me physically when I was 4 years old. That's another story I don't think we'll get into at this time. But I've always studied the human condition from the time I was a small child, wondering why things are as they are. And from this study came the opportunity to observe and, I must say, to grow wise. And it is important to allow yourself to grow wise about what's going on in your world, what's going on in your country, in your city, during your times. Look at the times we're living in right now, with at this very moment a hotly contested presidential race, the economy tanking, people hurting, all kinds of challenges. And from all of this, if you can take a step back, if you can take a step back out of the arena, if only for a few minutes a day, and watch what you see and harvest such wisdom as there may be for you. You see the world through your eyes. Your perception of truth is indeed your truth. And it is important, Brian, when we stand before audiences, to share our perceived truth based on such wisdom as we may have. And when we share our perceived truth, whatever that truth may be, even if others do not agree with us, after all, Republicans and Democrats, you know, some feel one, some feel the other, but it is their perceived truth. And if you share it with passion, if you share it with enthusiasm, if you share it with deep belief, if you share your perceived truth with real I'm looking for a certain word. I guess I've used the words. It is this passion that carries your message home. You may not be right, so to speak, in the eyes of everyone in your audience, especially if you have a political view. However, at least they will be able to see that this is your perceived truth. So if we go back to authenticity, it is important that you, the speaker, whoever the speaker may be, this is for everyone on the call, speak with authenticity about matters which you know well. Speak with authenticity about matters you know well. You may not always be right, but your perceptions are yours. And what about when you make a mistake? Well, heaven knows every one of us makes mistakes. I've made 10,000 or more. Well, take that word apart, mistake. Mistake. A mistake is only a mistake. What do they do in the movies when there is a mistake? They do it over. I'll give you an example. I remember the time I showed up in the right city but the wrong state to present a program. This really happened, 1983.
Right city, wrong state?
Right city, wrong state. You want to know what happened in that?
Sure.
It really did. I showed up in Burlington, Vermont, because I was working with a travel agent at the time. I was speaking 4 or 5 days a week, and I had my travel agent do all my bookings, and I got all my booking cities from the person in charge of the seminar company for which I was then working, way back then, and she always gave me my cities by name of city only. So I went to my trusty OAG, official airline guide, and there was only one Burlington in the OAG, and it was in Burlington, Vermont. So I had my travel agent book me into Burlington, Vermont. I got there 10 o'clock one night, called the Howard Johnson to ask if they had transportation from the airport. And the first thing I noticed was they had the wrong area code. Well, you know, I'm not such a dummy. I was in line when the brains were given out. I realized they didn't have the wrong area code. I was in the wrong area code. So they're 10 o'clock at night. They roll up the sidewalks in Burlington, Vermont at 9 o'clock at night. No flights out till the next morning. I am in big trouble. I find a room for the night. I don't get to sleep, but I wake up the coordinator, seminar coordinator. Hey, where am I supposed to be this morning? She told me it was a different Burlington. Happened to be Burlington, Massachusetts. Thank God it wasn't Burlington, Illinois. It would have been really serious. So in the middle of the night, I did what I had to do. Called Air Vermont, got a flight out at 6 a.m. from Burlington, Vermont, to Logan Airport in Boston, from which I could get a limo, and an hour later I could be in Burlington, Massachusetts, to do the program. I went through all of that, but I turned it into fun. I happened to love Vermont maple syrup, and I'm in Vermont. So I got up very early. I didn't even go to sleep. I slept about an hour and put on my clothes. I found a coffee shop, an all-night coffee shop, and at 4 o'clock in the morning, I had hotcakes with Vermont maple syrup. Oh, boy, was that good. Then I hightailed it to the airport. I got to Logan Airport by 7 a.m., got to the venue by 8 a.m., and they all said, "Where are you? Where have you been? Where did you sleep last night?" Anyway, the program I presented on adrenaline, just adrenaline, no sleep, was one of the best programs I ever did. I thought you might like that little story.
At least you remember it that way, right?
No, hey, man, that's the way it was.
So that is it's another example of telling a great story. Do you include stories like this, like of your life experiences, even when presenting?
Always.
You know, standard workshop or something?
You see, they are the lubricant. The lubricant, you know, makes the wheels of commerce go around. Well, these are the lubricant. These humanize you. People love to hear about your mistakes. You want to hear about another one almost as bad, maybe worse?
Sure.
Okay. The scene was at the Red Lion Inn in Sacramento, California. It was my first program ever in my life, national. I had done a lot of local speaking, and I was working then for Dybal Management Development Systems, now long out of business, and there were 65, 70 people in the room. The program was called Managing People. Remember my first one? I did my very best. At the end of the program, one of the evaluations said, "The seminar presenter seemed somewhat unfamiliar with the material." Boy, was that the truth. But I presented it 3 or 4 more times that week. By the end of the week, I was good. Look, yeah, we crawl before we walk.
That's true.
Now, these are true stories. You know, you can't make this stuff up, and they're nothing to brag about. But if anything, I hope it's inspiring for people who are new in the business, and they're asking themselves, will I ever make it? Believe me, baby, if I can make it, anybody can make it.
So when you're talking about, I guess what you're talking about now is actually using a little bit of intuition. You're moving along with that.
Yes, a lot of intuition. What most of us do not know is that your body, this is every person, not just you, everyone. Everyone's body is a sensitive receiver. Did you ever deal with someone and you say to yourself, well, that guy's a pain in the butt or a pain in the neck or you know, whatever?
Everybody has. every day there's somebody, right?
But, Your body is telling you there's something wrong with, what's wrong with this picture? Albert Einstein, the great Einstein, said, when asked about the source of his cognitive skill, he said, well, most people just think with their brain. I think with my whole body. I think with my whole body. I have learned, now this is me speaking, not Einstein, though I have his picture in my office. My grandmother gave me an etching of Albert Einstein that she got way back, way, way back, 1932, when he spoke for her Hadassah chapter in Philadelphia. That's another good story. But we'll set that one aside. He said, I think with my whole body. Let me tell you what Emerson said, Ralph Waldo Emerson. He said, what lies before you and what lies behind you are as nothing compared with what lies within you. Emerson was a brilliant, brilliant man. And Dr. Willis Harmon, then alive and then the president of the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, way, way back, before I was a member of NSA, I was a member of the Association for Transpersonal Psychology, and I listened to him say these words, oh my Lord, late 70s, 1979 or 80 perhaps. I didn't join NSA till 83. And he gave a whole program on intuition, and he said, listen to no other voice. Now, for what it may be worth, throughout my speaking career as well as before my speaking career, this has been what guided every decision that I made, listening to my inner voice. When 18 years ago, Brian, almost 19 years ago now, I was then a very successful speaker doing, oh, maybe 75 gigs a year at the time for 3,000 to 5 or 6, sometimes 8. And I got this intuition saying I should no longer be doing this. I should abandon my speaking career and become a mentor for speakers. That was back in 1989. I listened to the inner voice. I became a mentor for speakers, and I may well be the best one in the world. I'm not burdened with modesty. You know what Napoleon said? He said, modesty is for people who have something to be modest about. So listen to your inner voice. And I'm saying this to everyone on the phone. Listen to your inner voice. Do what your inner voice tells you to do regarding your career, regarding your life, regarding your topic, regarding your market, regarding the speaking practice that you involve yourself in. All of that. Listen to your inner voice. You will not be wrong.
At the NSA, I heard you speak at your Meet the Pros table. And
yes, you did. That's where we met.
It is. And you talked about your inner fire. Can you share that with our audience?
Oh, will I talk about inner fire? I'm going to give you three examples, real-life examples, nothing fictional about these. Picture this. You're a simple milkmaid. This will be for the women in the audience. Uneducated, unlettered, no education, nothing. France is at war, I believe, with Great Britain, and you are in France. You somehow find your way to the presence of the King of France, and you, an uneducated, certainly simply dressed in your rustic garments from the hinterland, you make your way to the King of France, and you persuade the King of France to let you lead the army of France. A woman, a young woman, an uneducated woman, nothing about military experience. She had, this is a historical truth, I can't make this stuff up. She had such inner fire that the King of France did what she said, and she led the army of France to victory over their adversaries. Now, there was not a happy ending, sadly, for Joan of Orleans, Joan of Arc. Because sadly, and I was there, I was in Rouen, northern France. She was burned at the stake for being a witch. But that was after France won the war. So there was not a happy ending to that story. But her inner fire took her from being a milkmaid to lead the army of France. You might take a look at the inner fire of our present Democratic presidential candidate. Now, I'm not being an advocate. But boy, take a look at that inner fire and look where it is. We're 5 days before the election. We don't know what will happen. But there's inner fire visible to the whole world. I'll give you a second example of inner fire. Mark Antony, in Shakespeare's play, though this is a historical truth, Brutus, Cassius, and the rest murdered Caesar with their knives on the 15th of March, the Ides of March. Caesar was on his way to the forum, and a seer had said to Caesar, beware the Ides of March. But he went anyway. and his Brutus, who was his alleged illegal son, and Cassius, his friend, and the rest, murdered him. And Mark Antony was to give the funeral address. And Mark Antony, with his own version of Inner Fire, gave an address which Shakespeare recreated for the listeners, the viewers of his play, Julius Caesar, though he was repeating historical truths. And it started like this. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. Now, I'll spare you the details of that speech, which years ago I once knew by heart when I was studying Julius Caesar in third year of high school, just before I quit. In brief, his inner fire caused him to come up with such words, and you can read it in the play Julius Caesar, you'll read the words he used, to cause the people to revolt against Brutus, Cassius, and the rest, and to restore some form of democracy to Rome. You'll find that in the play Julius Caesar by Shakespeare. A third example, my last example, of inner fire was the man who became the first president of the United States. That was George Washington, an incredible hero. I could tell you many things about George Washington. I'll simply tell you this. The ragtag army of the colonies, with their feet, they didn't have any shoes. In the wintertime in Valley Forge, you surely have heard of the story, their feet were wrapped in rags. They had no arms. They had no nothing. And he held them together in the winter, I don't know exactly, 70, 75 it may have been. I'm not sure of the year. He held them together by his own inner fire and nothing else until Lafayette came from France with arms and various other things. And the colonies prevailed, and therefore we now have the United States of America. That was because of inner fire. Now, what did these three people, all of whom did what they did by speaking, Joan of Orleans, Joan of Arc, Mark Antony, George Washington, what did they have in common? They had deep belief. They had passion. What does your inner fire do for you? It empowers you. So when you stand before audiences, ladies and gentlemen, speak with passion, speak with deep belief, speak with emotion. Only the heart can touch the heart. Don't speak with your voice. Don't speak with your vocal chamber. Don't speak from your voice box. Speak from your heart. And when you do this, people cannot help but feel convinced that you must know what you're talking about.
Bert, we have a few questions from some of our listeners. And by the way, if you're listening right now, you can submit a question online at speakermatch.com/radio. Just go ahead and click on the little box or you can type your question into a box online. We'll be sure and get to that for you. The question is from Sandy in Albany, and basically what she's saying, Bert, is that she is a great speaker, but no one knows her, and she wants to know what are some steps she can take to kind of jumpstart her career. And before I let you answer that, I just want to tell people, if you're on the line right now and you push 1-1, that will basically raise your hand so that I can see that you have a question, and then we can put you on live with Bert. Okay? Bert, go ahead.
Are you ready?
Tell Sandy how can she get started.
Okay. Now, this will not be an encyclopedic answer, Sandy. It will be the best I can give you in a couple of minutes. Number one, you absolutely must have a website. Now, I'm not going to try to tell you in a couple of minutes how to create a website. But do research. See what other speakers' websites are about. Look at my website, BertDubin.com. While it's not so much a speaker's website as a speaker's mentor's website, there are, however, principles there. Among the principles, be live on your website. I'm live on my website. You'll see me there. And say the things to respond to the interests of the people who are your market. Don't talk about how good you are, Sandy. Rather, refer to the various ways in which you make them look good and be good. Speak about benefits for them and not about you. So in brief, that's the briefest answer. Now, I want a bit more I'll give you. Start an e-zine. For example, I have an e-zine. The 108th or maybe the 109th issue is to come out right after the election. I've already pretty much written it. It's not out yet, but it will be out around the 5th or 6th of November. And in that e-zine, first of all, be consistent. Mine happened to be a monthly. It's out there every month. Normally, as a rule, the first Tuesday of the month, I sometimes miss by a couple of days. But in 9 years, I have not missed an issue. So have an e-zine, and in that e-zine, address issues and concerns of interest to the market that you serve, and somewhere in there, invite them to contact you to talk about engaging you to speak, to train, to educate, whatever it may be that you do. In brief, that's what I would do if I were you, Sandy.
Bert, if people do want to see a copy of your e-zine or be added to your list, how can they do that?
How can they
find out about your other programs, too?
To give you a very simple URL, simply go to bertdubin.com. That's BURTDUBIN.com. BertDubin, all one word, .com. Upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little sign-in form to get on my list. And not only will you start to receive the current issue when the next issue comes out, but there will be a place there to go to see online, I'm sorry, actually on my blog, a year or two of past issues, all of which are free, all of which are good, all of which reek of wisdom, as does this phone call. I know you know that. No ego in that. It's simply the truth. Also, on my website, you'll find 35 downloadable and printable articles by me, all full of more speaking business wisdom. This is a passion of mine. This is what I've studied with the ardor of a lover. I don't know how to put it. I just love this business, and I love seeing people succeed in this business and make the difference they want to make in the world. And so get all of that stuff, which is free. Free, free, free. I won't even know you've gotten it because I don't see who goes and downloads my stuff. Then if you want to, I am a mentor for speakers. You can send me an email, inquire, and I have products that you can invest in, all with a one-year money-back guarantee, all of that. I won't let anyone lose when they do business with me. My clients succeed, as you may know. You'll see a bunch of blurbs by my clients, some of them earning several $100,000 a year, and they'll tell you this. With phone numbers, by the way. These are real people. So in brief, thanks for the chance to do a commercial. Brian, thank you.
Absolutely. We have a caller with a question, and we have this fancy new system here, so I'm going to go ahead and put them on the line with us.
All right.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
You're on the line.
Hello, Bert.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Hi, Bert. This is Nani. I have a response for Sandy.
Oh, hello. Yes, Nani? My friend Nani.
Yes.
Hello, Nani. I'm thrilled that you're on the line.
I've been listening with real passion to what you are saying.
Thank you.
And
now, other people don't know this. You were a client of mine for years. You've gone from nowhere to five-figure success per speech. So, another little commercial. What's your question, Nani?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that a lot of people don't know about you, Bert, is that you have a depth that is other, you know, people don't ask about. And, you know, I would like for you to elaborate a little bit more on the depth that you bring, how not just using your intuition, but how you share molding. You know, Sandy, this is my recommendation to you. Hire Bert. I hired Bert Dubin, and he brought me within 30 days to being up and running and speaking, and my career has just soared ever since, because part of what happens with speakers is we don't know how to organize ourselves, and he puts you into organizational mode very quickly. So that, you know, but there is a depth that people often miss. So, Bert, I would love for you to expand on that. You know, I'm all ears.
First, I have to give Brian an apology. Brian, I never intended for this to be an infomercial. This was not planned.
It was
no,
not
it
easy.
Wasn't.
I can attest to that.
I didn't even know that Nani would be on the line. I never even sent this to my list. She's on your list. All right, well, let me put it like this, Nani, and for Nancy and whoever else is listening. If you deeply believe in, I'm just reiterating stuff I've said before. If you deeply believe in what you do, if you have character, strength of character, if you have authenticity, if you have integrity, resolute integrity, there are no degrees in integrity. There's no such thing as a partial virgin. You are or you aren't. Well, that's how integrity is. You have it or you don't. If you have all of these things, and if you have it, you've heard me say fire. Maybe you haven't heard me say this one, fire in your belly. If you absolutely will not give up. Now, on top of all of that, which we've already discussed earlier on the call, it goes something. There's something else, too. You must make of yourself an expert on something. Now, this we have not yet covered, Nani and Brian and Nancy. Be an expert on something. Now, don't be an expert on something people won't pay for. Be an expert on something the world needs. If you deal with personal development, be an expert on something that helps people develop. If you deal with organizations, and most of us do, then you must think in terms of what's going on within the organization. What do they want? Well, let me tell you something about what organizations want. Number one, first of all, they want return to shareholders. In other words, they want to make money so they can pay their stockholders money. Secondly, they want the president, the CEO, the managing director to look good. These are the two top concerns. Third, the chief executive, the CEO of the organization, want to look good himself or herself, as the case may be. How does this happen? How does this happen? By enhancing productivity, by enhancing profits, by enhancing sales, by marketing penetration. Now, I have just named four things: productivity, profits, sales, market penetration, by enhancing the ability of relationships, communication. Now, these are various topics which any speaker can learn about by doing research. And if you will make of yourself a master of some aspect of something organizations want, and make of yourself so skilled at understanding that, and then align that, tie that in, Nani, with what's going on within that organization, within their market, among their people, and do it with fluency, with passion, with deep belief. And I'll give you a further example of that. For speakers, the major market, and I'm so glad you brought this up, the major market for speakers, Nani, is the association market, professional and trade associations. Let me tell you what is on the mind of the decision maker, and I'm way off the script here. I'm just talking off the top of my head. Let me tell you what is on the mind of the decision maker who can hire speakers of trade and professional associations, the major market for speakers, at least in North America, the major market for speakers. Let me tell you what they want. More than anything else, they want perpetuation of dues income. Write that down. Perpetuation of dues income. Why? Because dues are the oxygen of the organization. Without dues, they've got nothing. What do you do, what do you say that will help them get their members to renew every year? What else do they want? They want members to come to the meetings, because most associations, my own, the National Speakers Association, generate more net revenue from their annual meetings than from their dues. That's how most associations are. Now, if they want members to come to the meetings, what must they do? They must give members value. They must engage speakers that will address the issues close to the hearts, the interests, the needs, the challenges, the concerns of the people who are coming to the meetings. So I know I've gone off quite a rant here, probably too much for you to write down all at one time. Nevertheless, within the confines of the time we've got, we don't have all day, that's the answer, Nani, to your question, and for you, Nancy, and for you, Brian.
Well, I think that it all fits into the theme perfectly. These are the kinds of things that you don't necessarily hear about from most people that are giving advice to speakers, so I think that's very helpful. We have another caller right now, and I think we have time for that question. Go ahead, whoever just raised their hand.
Hi, my name is Saul Bertha. Thank you very much for sharing.
Your name is Saul, S-A-U-L?
S-O-L.
Saul. Hello, Saul. I'm happy to know you.
Well, and I'm delighted to have listened to you give your points there. Very inspiring and sound true and authentic.
They are true and authentic, Saul.
I get it. And I've always valued authenticity a great deal, so it's a pleasure to hear you. You say
Thank
be
you.
An expert on something that people need. My topic
right.
is I know a practical way to repair our broken government. I know a practical way to get politicians from opposing camps to work out their differences in a way that will really serve the public interest. Who is my audience if I'm going to be a public speaker?
Well, you have a major challenge there, and I'll tell you why. As soon as we get into the realm of politics, and heaven knows if you have paid any attention to the newspapers, the radio, television, especially this week, 5 days out from election, you know about this, you are becoming an advocate for something, whatever it may be that you feel will repair a broken government.
Right.
The problem with becoming an advocate in the realm of government is finding governments, whether city governments, county governments, state governments, or the national government, to pay you. Now, indeed, a market for you might well be, and do make notes, the government of the city in which you live, or of cities generally, the government of the county in which you live, or of counties generally, the government of the state in which you live, and for those listeners in Canada, the province in which you live, and the government of the country in which you live. Now, one person who made the most of this, his name is Rudolph Giuliani, who was the governor, the mayor of New York when 9/11 came along, and he now refers to himself as, and I put this in quotes, it's his phrase, America's mayor, end quotes. He started a consulting organization, which I understand generates millions of dollars a year, telling cities how to run themselves. Now, I am not speaking for or against Rudy Giuliani. He's a brilliant man. I'm simply telling you that's how he did it. So there we are. Become the mayor. Make your city run beautifully. How about that one, Saul? And then teach others how to do it.
But you see, so you're saying that that my market is pretty much limited to that, to governments. In other words,
after all, they're the ones you want to fix. And heaven knows, I don't care which your party may be, lots of governments need fixing. There's too much fraud, too much mudslinging, too much self-serving in the terms of creating propositions. They usually name a proposition the opposite of what it does so as to fool the voters. Too much deception, not nearly enough integrity in government. I'm with you. I want you to succeed. And I'm telling you, it is not an easy game. It will take tremendous strength of character. Most of the qualities that you've heard me discuss on this call, Saul, if you are to make it in that field. However, if you refuse to let yourself be defeated and refuse to give up, you will succeed in fixing government somewhere, somehow.
Well, Bert, I think we have just a little bit more time. And before we do go, there's one more thing that I'd like you to just talk about that you've talked a little bit about before, and I think that it's kind of important for us to mention. You talk about vision and the significance of having a vision. And in order to have a really, truly successful speaking business, you talk about how important that is. Can you kind of elaborate on that?
I'll be more than happy to. Naomi Rhodey, I believe she was the 1989-90 president of NSA, coined a phrase which in all these 18, 19 years I have never forgotten. The phrase she coined was and is the privilege of the platform. Think about those words. And think about what is possible when you can stand before 50 people, 500 people, 5,000 people, or whatever number, and have an influence on their life, if only for an hour or two, or whatever the case may be. Vision. A vision of the possible. The possible world of the industry you serve, of the organizations you serve, the possible future for the people in that industry in that organization. After all, life is a one-way ticket. We aren't coming back. This is not a rehearsal, as Stuart Emery put it. This is not a dress rehearsal. It's the real thing. And we pretty much learn as we go. And so if you have a vision of what you can do for yourself and your family, as well as what you can do for the universe of lives you touch, with all that you know, with all of your life experience, all the mistakes you've made, all the triumphs of your life, all that you have observed of the human condition, all that you have observed, of the power of love. We haven't discussed that before, but it comes to my mind in the moment. All that you have observed of the significance of having character, of the significance of having resolute integrity, of the significance of being a bulldog and going after what you want. Now, since I mentioned love for the moment, let me just tell you something about love. I don't know who it was that said these words. When you love something enough, it reveals all its secrets to you. How do you think I learned about the speaking business? I love the business. I surrendered to my possibilities to be in the business and to make it, and later to be an influence on others in the business. You see, if you only realize that you, when you stand before audiences, tap into an incredible inner light, your inner light, your essence. One great speaker put it beautifully, you, the speaker now, you are a living human treasure. You can make an incredible difference, and you alone will decide what the difference is. I'm reminded of Cabot Robert, the founder of NSA. Do you know, back in 1973, when he had the vision of NSA, didn't really form for several years yet, he was already making a huge amount of money as a speaker, and I might say as a real estate investor too. He didn't need the money. But he saw all these people that were indeed, not very many people really, who were speaking, and only about a dozen national speakers back in 73. But all of them were in competition with each other, and Cabot had a vision. He saw a power. He said, why should we fight over the pie? Why don't we make it a bigger pie? Why don't we get together? And he surrendered to his purpose to form the National Speakers Association. First meeting, they only had 60 or 70 people, and it grew from there. So have a sense of what you can do. I'm reminded of Leonardo da Vinci. There was an interesting quote about Leonardo, written by a biographer of his. This is a quote directly from the Encyclopedia Britannica about Leonardo da Vinci. From his earliest days, he flung himself upon his studies with an unprecedented ardor of delight and curiosity. That's how he developed the concept of submarines, of helicopters, of aircraft, and so much more, hundreds of years before they were invented. It all came from surrender to his purpose. Emerson said something else beautiful. The power that is in you. This is a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. The power that is in you is new in nature. And none but you know what that is which you can do, nor do you know until you try. I think I've summed it up, Brian.
I think you have very nicely. One more time before we go, Bert, how do people get in touch with you?
Okay, I have an 800 number. It is 800, not 888, 800-321-1225. I'm in Mountain Standard Time. I answer during normal business hours during the week. I have a website, www.bertdubin.com. And, of course, I have an email address, bertdubin.com. That's pretty uncomplicated.
All right. Well, thank you again very much. And for anybody that is listening to the replay, all of this, all the links to Bert's site will be available on our site, speakermatch.com/radio. The replay will be available there shortly. And I think that pretty much covers it for the day. Thank you again.
Can I share with one closing quote, please, Brian?
Absolutely.
What you are is God's gift to you. What you do with what you are is your gift to God.
Thank you for calling, and I appreciate your time, Bert.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the Speaker Match radio series, Success Strategies for Speakers from the Pros. Speaker Match is the leading provider of tools and services for emerging professional speakers. You can find more information about Speaker Match at www.speakermatch.com. Our toll-free number, if you prefer to reach us by phone, is 1-866-372-8768. International callers can reach us at area code 512-372-8768. Thank you again for listening, and we wish you the best in your speaking career.